where we're starting. The last time we were reading about, we started in Perek. Perek Tet. So we did Perek Tet and Yud last week. So we'll do a quick review and then we'll move on. So I'm just going to and then we'll move on to Perek Yud Aleph. Okay, hold on. Okay, so last time we were our main focus is the famous sin of David HaMelech with Bathsheba, and that's really very core in understanding David HaMelech. But in order to understand that, you really have to start at the beginning. And I think that's a big mistake that a lot of people make when they address the issue of the sin of David and Bathsheba. They completely forget to look at the context. So a lot of the times they say things which are partially true, but really are miss the whole story. So let me take a look here. Okay, I think I need to call back because I'm getting an echo. I'm gonna call back. Hi. Okay. Hopefully I won't get an echo now. All right. Okay. So we started in Perek Yud. So right before Perek Yud, David had seemed to have reached the peak of his. I'm still getting an echo.
We can try muting and see if that helps.
Okay. It's okay now. All right. So now I'm going to try one more time calling back. So all right. So David had right before reached the peak of his kingdom, and it says in Perek Tet. In Perek Chet, at the end of Perek Chet, it says in Pasuk Tet Vav, "Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael." David reigned over all of Israel. V'hi David osa mishpat olamo, and David did justice and righteousness for all of his people. And then it lists the who he appointed to his government. I just hear that the Ralbag makes an interesting statement. So he actually, I identified the beginning of David's problems with the beginning of Perek Tet. So he takes it one step before. He says, "V'tzadok tu b'achi melech ben Avyatar kohanim Zeriah Sofer," and then the very end of Yud Chet, "Uvenei David kohanim hayu," that David's sons were Kohanim, and people translate that as not Kohanim who would do Avodah, but as Kohanim as Sarim. So the Ralbag actually identifies that as the beginning of his problems. So he says like this, Rotza lomar umoshalim. So David and Melech had made them, in very high positions. And this matter was the cause of many of the evil things that befell David. Because if he hadn't done this, then Avshalom would not have rebelled, and Amnon and Adonia would not have rebelled. As you could see, just from very little amount of investigation. So if the king had been more diligent in looking after his sons, so none of this would have happened to him. So it's interesting that he identifies it as really an issue of how he dealt with his sons. So I found it very interesting, and then I looked a little further in the Ralbag, and he actually seems to contradict what I had said last time. Let me just say.
Wait, I'm sorry, I missed it. What did he do wrong?
So the Ralbag wants to say, this is really the beginning of David's problems. That up until now, David had been continuously increasing in success and, doing tzedakah and mishpat for all his people. But then he identifies this point as the problem. That uvenei David kohanim hayu. That David's sons were made into, they were given positions of high positions in the government. So he says that was really the beginning of his problems. But interestingly, he doesn't say that what happened with Tziva was a problem. So I just wanted to find the other Ralbag here. So the Ralbag which number Toelas was it? In the 39th Toelet. So this is they list this after Perek Chaf Aleph, and they have the Ralbag's list of Toelet on that. So he says in number 39. So it says the 39th Toelet, 39th lesson to be learned here. Hulodia Yosher David Shekvaria Osa Mishpat Tzedakah L'Olamo. So this is to make known the righteousness of David, that he did Mishpat and Tzedakah for all his people. So he did justice and righteousness for all his people. Lo Ayamali Meino Me'achad Me'a. So he was not, he didn't hide eyes from even one. This is the proper character of a good king. So it mentions that David was concerned whether there was anybody left from the house of Shaul, to do the kindness of Hashem with him for the sake of Yehonatan. And there, that's why it also mentions Shigam l'Chanun ben Nachash ishtadel David la'asot chesed. Even with Chanun, the son of Nachash, the great enemy, who was the great enemy of Israel, Ralbag doesn't say that. I'm adding that. So David sought to do kindness. Lashivlo gumul tachas achesed shigam alo aviv, in order to return to do good to him in accordance with the kindness that his father had done with him. So, and then the next Toelet, it mentions, number 40, is that it's not proper for a man to give high positions to his son while he's still alive, or his sons. Halotira Masha Karla David Meharam Ibn Masha Asab Banav Sarim. Don't you see what horrible things befell David because he did this for his son, made his sons high into high positions? If it were not for this, Amnon would not have sinned with his sister, and Avshalom would not have rebelled against him. And also, what happened to Adoniahu, that's in the beginning of Melachim Aleph, would not have happened. This is very clear. So the question is, the question for you guys is, does this contradict? Or is it, can we reconcile it? Or is the Ralbag outright contradicting us, or not?
Well, do you mind just reviewing the basic point of last week?
Yeah, no problem. I'll very quickly review what the story was. So it said that so after it records that David had reached the peak of his kingdom, everything is going very well. So it says that David wanted to know if anybody was left from the house of Shaul. So as we know, Shaul was the king before David, And Shaul was told that he would lose the kingdom. And after that, he became very jealous of David, because the people were very fond of David. And it made Shaul very angry, and he wanted to kill David. And David, for the rest of Shaul's reign, was always basically running for his life from Shaul. But David was very close with Shaul's son, Yehonatan. And Yehonatan himself seemed to have some issues with his father. He didn't always agree with his father. So David had promised Yehonatan that he would always take care of his household. So David becomes king after, so Shaul dies and Yehonatan also dies. They die in the same battle. And the beginning of Shmuel tells the story of David consolidating his reign, not only over his own tribe, over Shevet Yehudah, but over all of Israel. So the ten tribes to the north of Shevet Yehudah as well. So he promises, so he made a promise to Yehonatan. And now it says, now that David has, you know, fought his battles, and he's even, you know, moved his capital to Yerushalayim, and things seem to be going well, it says that he wants to do kindness of Shaul. So he finds out there is one person left, and his name is Mephibosheth, who is the son of, Yehonatan. And Mephibosheth the news came. So Mephibosheth, when he was very, very young, when Yehonatan and Shaul died, and his nurse, so when she heard the news, she became very frightened, started to run while holding Mephibosheth, and dropped Mephibosheth, and he became crippled in both of his legs. So Mephibosheth is left. So he finds out that there's a servant of Shaul around. His name is Tziva. And Tziva tells him, yes, there's this one person left, Mephibosheth. So basically, what does David do? He arranges that Tziva, the old servant of Shaul, himself was a significant person. He had, I believe, 15 sons and, and 20 servants of his own. So he made Tziva a servant to Mephibosheth. So that first kindness that David performed. So, right? So are the facts there clear?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's number one. Then he does something which seems so that at first glance seems okay. He's being kind. Everything seems very good. But there are a few things that bothered us, though. So it seems strange, first of all, and somewhat risky to make an important person like Tziva into the servant of a insignificant person who has no power. So it's described as a person who has crippled legs, that to make Tziva into a servant seems like David might be setting himself up for some problems in the future. And it's and the kindness that he did seemed strange, because he could have just simply taken care of Mephibosheth. Why make Tziva into his servant? Right? Meaning Tziva could just let Tziva be, and David could take care of Mephibosheth and fulfill his promise to Yehonatan. It seems something strange seems to be going on. So that bothered us a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Right, so it's a little weird. So then in Perek Yud, it says that the king of Ammon died. The king of Ammon's name was Nahash. And we know about Nahash from Shmuel Aleph. So Nahash was not, as his name indicate, was not a very friendly guy. He became famous when he attacked the Jewish people. So he attacked the city named Yavesh Gilad, and the people of the city came at him and they said, let's make peace and we'll serve you. He said, the only way that I'll make peace with you is if everyone in the city gouges out their right eye, and I want to shame all of Israel. So they say, give us a week, and look, somebody will come to our aid. So he says, fine. So Shaul had recently been crowned king by Shmuel, the Navi, and not all of the people accepted him, because they said they didn't believe that he would be able to lead them in battle, and they didn't think he had what it took. So this was Shaul's time that he proved himself. He gathered a very large army, attacked and destroyed Nahash's army. So Nahash was not a very friendly fellow, and very cruel. So it seems, we're not actually told the story, but it seems that Nahash had done kindness for David. And that probably happened when David was on the run from Shaul. So since Nahash is the, in other words, Shaul is Nahash's enemy, David is also Shaul's enemy, so it seems that Nahash probably helped David out when he was on the run from Shaul. Now, the problem here is that Nahash died. So this and David now is king of all of Israel and Yehuda. And his son now became king. His son's name was Hanun. So David decided to send people to comfort him because his father had passed away. So at first that seems, that's nice. You know, he's being kind to somebody who was kind to him. But then we see what happens. He sends messengers to comfort him. And what happens is that that Hanun's servants say, nope, David's just sending spies. So they, to make a long story short, they cut their beards, they cut off half their beards, and they close in half, and they send them on their way. So basically another example of this very deep cruelty of the Ammonites. So, but there David's mistake seems to be even more apparent. Because just because somebody helped you, because, you know, they were the enemy of the person who's your enemy, doesn't mean that they are a person that you should be seeking to be kind to. So Nahash was one of the greatest enemies of the Jewish people. So he wanted to tell the people of Yavesh Galat to make peace with them if they gouge out their eyes. That's not a good person. That's not somebody you start sending, you know, menachamim to. That you send to comfort. So that's the background. So the Ralbag, though, seems to say that these are examples of David's tzedakah and mishpat. And that's a little bit bewildering.
Wait, what did he say?
He says that these two things are examples of David's doing tzedakah and mishpat.
Uh-huh.
So that's very strange. So, I mean, he says, Ve'aseimo chesed b'avor Yehonatan. He's going to do, with Mephibosheth, he's going to do chesed. And with, Nachash dies, his son Hanun. So there he says, Vayomer David Esach chesed im Hanun ben Nachash. Right? So, does anybody have any ideas?
You guys did this last time, or...?
No, the Ralbag is new. I'm asking the based on the Ralbag. Who was saying they have an idea?
Carolyn.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have an idea, but I also have a question about this whole thing. But,
yeah.
I mean, my idea was, yeah, it does seem like it was Tzedakah and Mishpat in all these cases, but at the same time, there was also, he was missing something. I mean, you can't always do what on the simplest level seems like Tzedakah and Mishpat. I think that is what motivated him, but
mm-hmm.
he's, like, we were talking about this naivete, like, there's something he's missing in terms of how to deal politically with people. or something. I don't know. Well, that's related to my question. My question is, it seems very strange to me, like, that I feel like we must be missing something really big here, because David HaMelech, who was such a chacham, for him to do things that to, like, an Amharic who knows nothing about anything would say, like, that is very not wise.
Right.
Politically, common sense, like, it's just insane. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
I mean, that level, I mean, I can understand maybe, like, you know, I don't know, like, certain, you know, like, certain people in Tanakh were, like, very involved in, you know, these strategies, so there were certain things in the practical world that were, but David HaMelech, I mean, he's, like, he's a warrior, he's, like, I cannot understand, like, how something so obvious he would just totally miss.
What are you talking about now?
She wants to know what's, David seems to be making mistakes that even, you know, that even a common person, common people, and we're reading this, and we're saying, this seems to be a major mistake here.
Which one? Both of them?
Yeah. So that's Carolyn's question. In other words, how could David, who is a very shrewd, very wise individual, so what is going on here? Right?
I mean, it's true, like, you know, like, we, like, I don't know, like, certain things, like, in the interaction between, like, let's say, Yaakov and Esau, like, there are certain, like, certain cases, like, in Tanakh where, you know, like, the tzaddik is careful not to give the, like, a rasha, like, any, you know, anything to latch on to, any excuse that he could, like, say, this is, I don't know, like, any excuse to be able to unleash his hostility or whatever, but...
Right.
Okay, so you act justly, but it's, like, any, you know, like, I'm thinking even just, like, you know, just, like, my, like, the head of a school or, like, anyone in any position of leadership knows, I would think, like, it's just basic common sense that you don't act too nice to people who aren't nice. Like, you act justly, but you don't go too far, because... They are, like, in this case, they're going to, like, suspect you have motives that are, like, their motives, and
right.
They're going to react accordingly. I mean...
Right. Right. Right, so that's a good question. Does anybody want to offer a possibility?
I was thinking maybe that David HaMelech could have been overestimating the people.
Okay, go ahead.
Because sometimes somebody will say something to me, you know, that is actually right. You know, they are actually saying the correct, you know, something realistic, but for whatever reason, I'm just not emotionally or psychologically ready to hear it, and you know, it just upsets me. I just get upset. I'm not in a position to learn from the person just because I'm not psychologically ready for it. Possibly that's going on here also, that David HaMelech was doing the proper thing here, but because Nahash did do a good thing for him, and when someone does do a good thing for him, no matter how bad he is, there should be Hakaras HaTov for that Tov, even though he's usually evil.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing by what was the other one?
By Mephibosheth, the grandson of Shaul, who is the son of Yonatan, and Siva, the servant of Shaul, who is made into the servant of Mephibosheth.
Right. That one, I don't know, but it could be possibly the same principle that It's not as clear to me why that would be, but possibly that. Well, let's just stick to the other one for now. That that was the right thing to do, but since people know Nahash to be like an evil person, like such a horrible person, they're going to think David HaMelech is. Plus, he did. That was a personal favor to David HaMelech. That wasn't like a national favor.
Right.
So for him to do, to send like messengers or whatever, that's like a public thing.
Right.
You know, possibly if all the people were on a high level, they would be able to recognize, well, David HaMelech is the biggest chacham, and he knows, you know, if that's what he's doing, then Nahash deserves Hakaras HaTov, and that, you know, that we trust him. But possibly not. Possibly he was overestimating the people, and all the people see is this evil guy Nahash, and David HaMelech being nice to him, and it just upsets them.
Right. But then also you see that there's Chanun's reaction, which is to completely shame these men, you know, by doing something exceedingly cruel.
Right.
Right. By shaving off half their beards and cutting their clothes in half. So that's, in other words, that is an interesting reaction there. A cruel reaction. And that leads to a large war. So it leads to a full-out war with Amon, which is a big problem for David. So we're seeing some. I think part of the answer that I would give to Carolyn's question is that we have to remember that the way the Tanakh describes events is that it distills it down to the sort of a bare bones kind of description in order for us to be able to learn from it. So now, when real events occur, so they're not, it's not so clear, it's not like, you know, as clear as it is written on the page in front of us, where you could see this leads to this leads to this, meaning you make the move, and there's always a tremendous amount of factors and people saying this and people saying that, and the judgment is always made in a much more complex and dynamic kind of situation. So, but here it's taking that, in other words, it's taking what occurred and really bringing it down to its bare bones. So yes, so when we look at it, it seems like obvious the mistakes that he's made. So, but at the same time, in other words, he's making these decisions in the real world, as opposed to and also it is interesting that that not all of the Rishonim even identify what he did with Mephibosheth and Siva as being a problem. So. So even after it was written, it doesn't seem to be clear to everyone. Also, I think there's an important term, which is chesed. So the Rambam makes a very, very big point of this at the end of the Mora, that tzedakah and mishpat are a sign of a measured, middle-of-the-road response to a situation, based on a clear judgment. Now, chesed is already going beyond the measure. And he makes a very big point there that sometimes chesed can indicate something good, and sometimes chesed can indicate something bad. So meaning it goes beyond the measure. And in both of these instances, it says that David sought to do chesed. So it doesn't say that he... So it's interesting. It says at the end of... at the end of Chet, that he did tzedakah and mishpat, or mishpat and tzedakah, for all of the people, and then it gives two examples of chesed. So it seems that when David went beyond the measure, so then the problems began to emerge. So I'm not saying that that's the entirety, that gets down to the essence of the chet. But I think that that was just something that I wanted to point out, about how it expresses it. And it doesn't say that he wanted to do tzedakah with the house of Shaul. It says he wanted to do v'esa imo chesed bavur Yehonatan. Because additionally, his promise to Yehonatan was not an instance of wanting to do tzedakah and mishpat for somebody, but was going really beyond the measure that he made an oath to Yehonatan, that he would always take care of him and his family. And certainly with Chanun, that was not a person that one should be doing chesed with. Tzedakah and mishpat is one thing. And there's a chazal, the Radak brings it down, that it says, Lo tidrosh shalomam b'tovasam. So there's a prohibition. You can't seek the peace and the good of these other nations. So atah motzei b'misha ba leyam b'midas rachamim sof ba liyidei b'zayon. So you find that one who comes to them trying to be with the midas rachamim, trying to be kind, ultimately he'll come to shame. Ve'izazeshenemar etzachasadim chanun. So there in the Tanchuma, they said that was this case. That's really the example of the prohibition of seeking their peace and their good. So, and then it says what happened there. That he ended up being into a very very large war, and it goes on. So I'll skip it over because it just retells the story. So. So David sought to do kindness with somebody that God said, don't seek their peace and good. So Hashem said to David, you transgressed my Torah. I write, don't seek their peace and their good. You do chesed with them. Al tahit tzadik harbe. So now quotes from Koheles. So do not be overly righteous. Mikan shelo yeh abda mevater al Torah. So from here we see a person should not try to go or, you know, pass over or go beyond the Torah. So, of course, sometimes one is supposed to do chesed, but these were instances where chesed was not the right approach. So now with that background, now they're at war with Amon, and a great battle ensues, and the first stage of the battle ends at the end of Perek Yud, and they win the battle, but the war is not yet over. So it says, okay. So now we're at the beginning of Perek Yud Aleph. So it says that Vayhi L'Teshuvat Hashana. So now is at the turn of the year. Le'et Tzeit Hamalachim. The time that the kings would go forth. Vayishlach David et Yoav et Avadav imo et Kol Yisrael vayashchidu et b'nei Amon vayatziru al Rabba v'David yoshev v'Yerushalayim. So David sent Yoav and his servants with him and all of Israel, and they attacked. They laid siege to they laid siege to Amon. They laid siege to Rabbah. They destroyed Bnei Amon and laid siege to Rabbah. The David Yoshev Yerushalayim. And it ends up by saying David stayed or was remained or dwelled in Yerushalayim. And is Yael there? Yael's not on the phone? Nope. Okay. So so last time she mentioned that it seemed that that one of the core problem here was that David after he, in other words, says he's reached the peak of his kingdom, he's doing mishpat and tzedakah for all his people. So it seems that David wanted the past to be the past. In other words, he wanted to be able to now move beyond all the terrible years, all the difficult years of war and difficulty, and be able to move to the next stage. So the first is the house of Shaul, who is his great enemy, and caused him many problems. So now he's going to put the past behind him, and now he could do kindness with the house of Shaul, restore the lands of Shaul to his family, and basically the past is behind him. So Shaul was an enemy, and now I take care of the house of Shaul. And the next is Amon, so the great enemy of Israel, so who caused such problems. Now David, because now he had a good experience with Amon, he could send people to be Menachem Avel, to comfort Hanun, whose father died, meaning let's put the past behind us. All the troubles of the past are now over. And this definitely brings to mind the idea of Yaakov was dwelling, and the let me just grab a chumash, hold on. So it says in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev, Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Aviv Beretz Kanaan. So Yaakov settled, was dwelling in the land of the sojournings of his father in the land of Canaan. So, let me see. So where's the, just finding the Rashi there. So Va'od Nidrash Bo Vayesha Bikesh Yaakov Leshev Bashalva. So there's a drush by Vayeshev. It says Yaakov wanted to dwell in solitude and peace. Kafatalav Rogzo Shel Yosef. So they're jumped on him the problems with Yosef. Tzadikim mavakshim leshev b'shalva. So the righteous seek to dwell in peace, in tranquility. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, lo dayan l'tzadikim mashem shemetukam lehem l'olam haba. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Hashem says, is it not enough for the righteous what's prepared for them in the world to come? Elishim mavakshim leshev b'shalva b'olam hazeh. But they seek to also find rest in this world as well, right? So there seems to be a similar idea that Yaakov, there was a problem. In other words, it was not time for Yaakov to be handing over the reins to his sons. And here I think we see another parallel to, and I think the very similar to the idea that Ralbag was saying, the problem first emerges in handing over power to his sons. I mean, these are really all one thing. Because what created the problem for Yaakov? That he thought, in other words, how was he going to be able to be in tranquility, to be able to rest? Very simple. His sons will take over. Or Yosef will be in charge of this, and or these sons will be doing this. They'll take care of everything. And he'll be able to just be involved, in other words, just be Yaakov, or be involved in what he wants to be involved in. So we see that that was the first problem with David HaMelech as well. First, he sets his sons up to be to be Kohanim, to be Sarim, to be in high positions in the government. And then we see this, we see two more expressions of this seeking to be, you know, to put the past behind them. All those troubles, all those difficulties are gone. So we will now have, deal this way with the house of Shaul, we'll deal this way with Nachash, and then the problems emerge. So all of these things are really, I think, interrelated. In other words, all of these elements, all of these problems are connected. And the Ralbag, I think he's right to, in other words, on one hand, I think Carolyn said before, in other words, the motivation maybe came out of a desire to do what was right, but it expressed itself as chesed. In other words, it expressed itself as going beyond the measure. It was not, what he should have been doing is tzedakah and mishpat, measured dealings with all his enemies, or with all his, or with, whether they be enemies or whether they be friends, it has to be measured, in other words, middle of the road. But he went beyond. And so I don't know if that is exactly what the Ralbag is saying, but I think it's very much fits with what he was saying. So now we have David in a situation. There is now he's not even going out to war. I mean, David is the great warrior. In other words, he is the one who would lead them into battle. He is the one who is fully involved. And now we have David. In other words, now that David has been, in other words, this description of David has now fully emerged. And now when we read the David Yoshev Yerushalayim, it expresses something very deep, right, which comes from what we've read prior to it. And this is when the problem emerges. So, any questions on that before we go to Pasuk Bet?
Yeah. I know you're just trying to get a basic background before we get into the main point of what we're doing, but I really feel like I'm just really not getting this. I don't feel really understand. I mean, it sounds like you're basically just saying, you know, he wished everything was wonderful and peaceful, and everyone was wonderful, but they weren't. I mean, like, was he in La La Land? Like, I mean, it just seems like he's, like, not even acting like a basic Amaritz. So, like, I don't understand. I don't understand his fate. I mean, he's a king of a country. I mean, of course he would have to, like, think about things and measure them. I mean, I know it's, like, maybe blowing up, like, what he did so that we can isolate it, whatever, like, and there were other factors and things going on. Like, that I understand, but I still don't feel like I get at all, like, what his distortion was and what we're supposed to learn from it. Like, I understand, like, let's say with Yaakov, like, I understand if you make, like, a slight miscalculation, like, if something is, like a tough call, right? And, like, you could see either side make sense, and you're not sure which way is the best way. And really, you don't realize it, but, like, you have this motivation that's, you know, that's pushing you to pick one over the other and really, like, you know, like, you didn't see the subtlety, like, it affected your intuition about it. Your judgment was clouded, so you picked the incorrect thing. But this seems like just, like, not subtle at all. I don't get.
Well, I don't think that David was making such an obvious mistake. Meaning, putting power, in other words, giving power over to others in order to take care of things. In other words, that seems like an intelligent move. Meaning, who is best to, in other words, who can you trust most? Well, it would seem those who are closest to you, meaning his sons. I'm going to appoint his sons to be in charge of different, in order to take over certain elements of the administration, and set up situations with those who were previously your enemies and try to create a situation of peace, in other words, try to move to the next stage of good relations with those people who in the past were the greatest enemies of Israel or were your personal greatest enemies. All those things seem to be intelligent moves in terms of running one's government. So I think that the mistake was a subtle mistake. The fact that it was a mistake really only emerges later when we can see the results, because others could do almost what would appear to us as almost identical, but it could be the correct move. I think we only see that it's a mistake from the results of the action, as opposed to if we were to just be told David did this and this and not see the results, I think that everybody would say that he acted appropriately. But the problem is if you look deeper and then you see the result, so then you go back and you see the little mistakes that he made. So meaning arranging one's administration intelligently is a good thing. Setting up your administration to be able to free yourself from the burdens of power is a bad thing. I mean, if he's trying to escape his responsibilities as king, that's bad. If he's setting up his administration intelligently, so that's good. And where the line is between those two things is really very difficult to tell. And I think that the story here is trying to sharpen that line and make it clear to us that line had been crossed. But it's still, from David's perspective, it's a very fine line between those two things. Does that help?
Yeah, I think I'm getting closer to understanding it.
We have to also see... We're also looking at the first half of the story. So now we have to see where the clearly there are some mistakes have been made, but now we're going to see where the full mistake emerges. So it doesn't emerge in a subtle way. Okay, so let's move on a little bit. So it says Vayihi le'et ha'erev. So it was in the evening time. Vayakam David me'al mishkavo. So David got up from his bed, and he started to walk around on the roof of the palace. He spotted a woman bathing from on top of the roof. And the woman was very beautiful. David sent, and he sought after the woman, inquired after the woman. Vayomer, hello Zos, bas Sheva, bas Eliam, Eshes Uriah, Hachiti. So, and he said, is this not Bat Sheva, the daughter of Eliam, the wife of Uriah the Chiti? Vayishvach, David Malachim, Vaykacha. So David sent messengers, and he took her. Vatavoe Lav, and she came to him, and he slept with her. V'hi mitkadeshet mitumatah. And so there's different interpretations here. She had been, she cleansed herself from her impurity, batashav el beitah, and she returned to her house. Batahar ha'isha, and the woman became pregnant. Batishlach batageid leDavid. So she sent, and she let David know. She had it told to David. Batomer hara anochi, and she said, I am pregnant. Vayishlach David al Yoav. David sent Yoav. Shalachi lai et Uriah Hittite. So remember, Yoav was at the battlefront. He was leading the siege against Ammon, against Rabbah, the capital of Ammon. So Vayishlach David al Yoav. Shalachi lai et Uriah Hittite. So David sends to Yoav, send me Uriah the Hittite. Vayishlach Yoav et Uriah el David. And Yoav sent Uriah to David. Vayavo Uriah elav. Uriah came to him. Vayishal David l'shlom Yoav. And David inquired as to the well-being of Yoav, l'shlom ha'am, the well-being of the people, l'shlom ha'milchama, and how the war was going. Vayomer David l'Uriah. David said to Uriah, Raid levetcha rechat raglecha. So David said to Uriah, go down to your house and wash your feet. Vayetze Uriah mi beit hamelech. Uriah left the house of the king. Vatetze acharav mas'at hamelech. And he sent out after him a royal gift. So a royal feast. Vayishkav Uriah petach beit hamelech. Uriah slept in the entrance of the king's house, et kol avdei Adonav, with the rest of the servants of his master. Velo yarad el beito. He did not to his house. Vayagidu leDavid leMor lo yarad Uriah el beito. So they told David, saying, Uriah did not go down to his house. Vayomer David al Uriah. David said to Uriah, Halo miderech hatava. So haven't you come from the path, Madu alo yarata el beitecha? Why didn't you go down to your house? Vayomer Uriah el David. Uriah said to David, Ha'aron v'Yisrael v'Yehuda yoshvim basukot v'adoni Yoav v'adoni al panei asadeh chonim. So Uriah said to David, the Aron and Israel and Yehuda are dwelling in sukot and booths, and my master Yoav and the servants of my master are on the battlefront, camped in the battlefront. And I'm going to come to my house to eat and to drink and to sleep with my wife. The life and the life of your soul. If I would do such a thing. David said to Uriah, Shiv bazegamayom amachar ashalecheka. So, stay here today, and tomorrow I'll send you. Vayeshev Uriah b'Yerushalayim b'yomahu mimacharas. So Uriah remained in Yerushalayim on that day and the next. Vaykralo David. So David called to him, invited him. Vayochel panav vayesht vayshakarei. So he ate before him, and he drank, and he made him drunk. Vayetzeva erev, he went out in the evening, lishkav b'mishkavo, to go sleep in his sleeping place, im avdei Adonav, with the servants of his master. Vel beto lo yarat, he didn't go down to his house. Vayiva boker vayichtov David sefer el Yoav. So it was in the morning, David wrote a letter to Yoav, vayishlach biyad Uriah, and he sent it in the hand of Uriah. Vayichtov ba sefer leimor, he wrote in the scroll, saying, Habu et Uriah el mul pnei hamilchama hachazakah. So place Uriah in the front of the battle, Achazaka of the where the battle is most fierce, b'shapta me'acharav, and then turn away from him, v'nikava meis, and so he'll be struck and he will die. So vayhi b'shmor Yoav el ha'ir vaytein es Uriah el makom asher yada ki anshei chayel sham. So it was that when Yoav was guarding the city. So he placed Uriah to the place that he knew that the most powerful warriors were there. And the men of the city went out and they battled with Yoav. And there fell from the servants of Vayamas Gam Uriah Hiti. And Uriah the Hiti also died. Vayishlach Yoav, and Yoav sent. Vayagid la David, and he told David to tell David. It's called Divrei HaMelchama, everything that happened in the war. Vayitzav et HaMalach Lemor, he commanded the messenger saying, Chalotzicha is called Divrei HaMelchama L'daber El HaMelech. So when you finish telling the king everything that happened in the war, and then if the king becomes angry and he said, did you get so close to the city when you were in the battle? Don't you know that the archers will shoot you from the wall? Who's the one who killed Abimelech, the son of Yerubeshes, the other name of Gideon? Don't you remember a woman threw a millstone onto him, Me'alach Olmah, from the wall, Vayamas the Sevates, and he died in Sevates, Lamed Gashtem L'Olmah. So why do you get so close to the wall? So it's a famous story, and everybody knows in battle you don't get too close to the wall. So V'Amart Gam at Uriah Hiti Mace. So then you should say, also your servant Uriah the Hiti died. V'Yelech HaMalach, so the messenger went, V'Yelo V'Agid L'David, Eskol Asher Shalachol Yoav. So when he came and he told David everything that Yoav sent him, Vayomer HaMalach El David. So the messenger said to David, Ki gabru aleinu anashim v'yitzu aleinu hasadeh. So the men overpowered us and they went out to us in the field, v'niya aleihem ad pesach hashar. And we were able to hold them up until we got to the opening of the gates. Vayoru amarim, and the archers shot el avadecha me'alach el ma'ah. They shot your servants from the wall, v'yamusu me'avdei ha'melech. And the servants of the king died. V'gam avdecha Uriah Hiti meis. And also your servant Uriah the Hiti died. V'yomer David el HaMalach, kos omar el Yoav. This is what, so you said to the messengers, this is what you should say to Yoav. Al yireh be'enecha hadavar hazeh, don't let this thing worry you. Ki chazeh v'chazeh tochal hechara, because like this and like that, the sword consumes. Achazeich milchamtecha el ha'ir v'harsah v'chazekehu. So strengthen the battle to the city and tear it down and strengthen it. So Vatishma Ishas Uriah Kimes Uriah Isha. So the wife of Uriah heard that Uriah her husband died. Vatisbod al Balah, and she mourned for her husband. Vayavor Avel, the days of mourning passed, Vaishlach David Vayasfa El Beso. So and the days of mourning passed and David gathered her into his house, Vatihilol Isha, she became his wife, Vatela Lo Bain. And she gave birth to the son, Vayira Davar Sharasal David Bene Hashem. And the thing that David did was evil in the eyes of Hashem. Okay. So, observations, questions? We have to end soon, but let's end off with your observations and questions.
It's hard to argue for him here. I mean, it seems horrible.
Right. Seems pretty bad.
The worst.
Right. But it's hard to imagine a more heinous kind of crime.
I mean, steal you steal someone's wife when they're away, and then you basically murder him.
Right. Right. It's pretty bad. Okay, other questions?
I would say that we have to keep in mind that this is, I think there's a difference here compared to if it was just, like, let's say he wasn't the king, and he was just a man who did this.
Right.
So I think you could understand, under these circumstances of being the king, like, if you try to think about, okay, well, what were his options? Like, let's say he did the chait, like, in a moment of passion, let's say, you know, then it's over, and he has to figure out, okay, what am I supposed to do about this? It's one thing if you're just, like I said, like, a guy, whatever, so you have to figure, but if you're the king, you have to think, what's that going to do to the country? If it gets out that he did this, what effect is that going to have on everyone? Like, he has to think about the whole nation, not just about himself and the immediate people involved and his relationship with God. Like, he also has to think as leader of a country. So I could see that maybe he'd be thinking it would be better for the nation, like, even though he knows, like, okay, I did a hate, but, you know, I could see saying, well, why should the nation suffer because of this?
So you're saying it's a cover-up.
So the idea of calling him and trying to get him to, you know, sleep with his wife so that no one would ever know, maybe wouldn't seem so insane from that perspective. And then when that didn't work...
For the nation, he has to cover this up.
What?
For the sake of the nation, he needs to cover this up.
Well, I mean, I could see having that hot. I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure that's wrong. I mean, certainly what he ended up doing in the end was wrong, but that particular trying that, I'm not sure. It's not clear to me that would be wrong. I don't know.
So wait a second, hold on. You're saying to murder someone to cover...
No, before that. I'm just saying, like, let's say it would have worked. I mean, inviting him home from war to see if he could, like, get him to sleep with his wife so that they would think the baby was his and no one would ever know, that I'm not sure that was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he was an average Joe Schmo, I think that would have been wrong.
Right.
But in terms of actually going... killing him, I don't know. I mean, it wasn't just killing him. It was really putting the whole nation into, you know, into peril. It turned a lot of things on their head. Like, it seems obvious from, like, once you get past a certain point in the story, you see that it's not about the nation. He's running away from what he did. Like, he can't face that this could really, like, come out and, like, what does this mean, and I don't know.
Right. Okay. Anybody, who else is on the phone? Is it just Dan and Carolyn?
Yakko's probably here. I don't know.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm still here.
Hey, Yakko.
Hi.
And any comments?
No.
Okay. So, right. So, and it's also, even with the background of, you know, of the mistakes that he was making before, this seems to be of a whole nother level of mistake. But even with the context, still difficult to understand what happened here.
Does the context help us at all?
I think ultimately it will. I'm just saying that that there's definitely, even after looking at this, it's still difficult to understand. In other words, it doesn't just, you know, sometimes you get a context and then you read the piece and you say, I can see perfectly how this, how one thing led to the next. But here, even seeing that David seems to have been making, in other words, yes, Yaakov, because of to be able to seek some solitude, then the problems started to emerge. He delegated power to his sons, that created that created a lot of problems. But you don't see that the next thing that Yaakov does is commit adultery and murder somebody, right? So that's a whole nother level of problem. So there's something that keeps, or it's something that sticks out in my mind. There's a lot of sending going on in the story. I mean, if you were to count the number of times that it says Vayishlach in this story, it's kind of it's a little bit. There's almost every other thing is Vayishlach David Malachim, right? In other words, everything is, he sends, and then Vayishlach Elah, Vayishlach Shalach Elah. In other words, there's a lot of sendings going on. And if you look in the previous two stories, you also see there's a lot of sending going on. So I think that that's definitely going to be part of it. I mean, just that observation alone is not going to tell us anything. But I think it is important to think for a moment, meaning, what does it mean when a king sends somebody? In other words, what does that do to the king? In other words, when a king says, I sent so-and-so to do this, or I sent him, meaning when you're delegating power. So so like we said before, the sending could be the king is intelligently setting up his administration. Good to delegate power, right? If you get the right people doing the right thing, so that could create a much better, much more efficient administration. But if this is David, you know, dissociating himself from the results of his action because he's seeking something else, seeking to escape the difficulties of power, so then we could start having a problem. Because once one separates oneself from one's actions, so it's very hard to see the moral repercussions of what one is doing. And when all you have to do is give the word, and then it's accomplished. Or you send this person to do this, you send this person to do that, it almost becomes, in other words, somebody else is doing it. In other words, one becomes totally removed and separated from what one is actually doing, from the true nature of what one is involved in. And I think that that's going to be at the core of the problem here, right? If we, starting with Mephibosheth and Siva, going through with Hanun, Achash, and then continuing on with this battle, and then most prominently in the story with Bathsheba, so it's always a step removed from David. Never David himself. It's always David sends. David, you know, sends so-and-so. He sends this person. He sends them. He has his messengers doing all of the work. So I think that's going to be at the core. That's something, I think, to reflect on until we pick up next week. So any last questions before we conclude?
I like your point. I think that it rings true.
About the sending.
Yeah, I mean, just in my own experience, that's true. At my firm, the managing partner,
mm-hmm.
not involved in really anything, any of the legal work.
Right.
And he's completely disconnected from what the lower people do every day.
Right.
And he's very disconnected, and it's hard to even speak to him about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you can imagine the moral problem that can happen. I'm not saying that particular person, but we don't have to look too far in the news of people very high positions where suddenly important documents are being shredded or the books are being fixed. And somehow, I mean, everyone knows that the head has to do something about this because they couldn't do this without his order. But somehow it's so far removed from that person that it takes a great shock. In other words, like Enron, or you know, one of these fiascos where it takes almost like you have to beat the person over the head until they actually even realize that they did something wrong. because they've so far, you know, they've removed the deed so far from themselves that they don't see any of the moral implications of the action. To the point that you could send people to battle and to their death and no realization of what you're actually doing. So I think that that's a, I think that is going to be, or that I think is a point to reflect on. So I would say the central ideas, you know, today are the idea of chesed as opposed to tzedakah and mishpat, that a going beyond, in other words, going beyond the measured response can either be the greatest evil or the greatest good, and the idea of having your, you know, your messengers, the ones lower down on the chain doing your work for you, can create a terrible situation of not seeing the moral consequences of your actions. So, I would say that those are the central ideas from today. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks
Thank
a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks.
Sure. Okay. All right. So excellent. So next. So looking forward to next.